This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
It was amazing. The atmosphere on set was really electric that day. I came on set and I'd been shooting for a little while before Hayden started, and I couldn't believe how many people were there. I was looking around going, so many people on set today. I couldn't figure out what was going on. And then the penny clicked when you walked out in the suit. I was like, oh yeah, everyone's here to see Hayden and as Vader, you know.
Yeah, it's like, well, you're like, well, what about me? It's all about him.
Yeah, they were so used to me by that point. They're totally over me.
It was said on episode 3 of Obi-Wan Kenobi that actions speak louder than words, but all we have are words here on the Dagobah Dispatch podcast. Welcome to the show, and what a show we have for you this week. We are going to deep dive into the big battle between Obi and Annie on the latest episode of Obi-Wan Kenobi, which happened much sooner than I expected, by the way. Plus, a big name is dropped for a big character that may be on the horizon. Oh, and BT Dubs, we will also be joined by the cast and director of the show. That's right, Ewan McGregor, Hayden Christensen, Moses Ingram, Rupert Friend, and Deborah Chow will all be here. And we will also get the full report from Star Wars Celebration. It's all happening right here, right now. On Dagobah Dispatch, I am Dalton Ross, joined by Devin Kogan and Lauren Morgan as we hitched a ride with our good friend Freck to the recording studio today. Devin, I'll give you all the credit in the world. You were a little dubious about Freck when you saw that Imperial banner on the back of his transport and you knew what was up.
Yeah, you know, as far as like Uber drivers go, he's, you know, he wouldn't be my number one choice. I think the betrayal is, you know, less than 5 stars, we'll say.
So look, we're going to get into the episode, but a few notes before we do. This will be an all spoiler chat as we talk about the episode. You know, I mean, no one big died and there's no giant cameos or anything. But, you know, if you don't want to know what happened, if you haven't watched it yet, you might want to skip ahead to our interview with the cast of Obi-Wan Kenobi. Also, just want to mention, hey, we're doing these occasional Twitter spaces and we're actually going to do one this Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening to this before then, you can catch that. But always just follow all three of us on Twitter or Instagram, anywhere else, and you'll know when we're doing these bonus chats on social media that you can check out. Once again, just want to mention that Devin spoke to the cast of the show out at Star Wars Celebration. We're going to play you that entire interview. And then Devin's also going to give us her report on the coolest thing she saw out there at the convention. So that's all to come. But first, let's get into what happened in episode 3, because there was a lot happening. And the three of us really have not been like texting or slacking or talking about it. So I don't really know your takes, although I read Lauren's article on everything that happened. Obviously, the big thing to get to first was the Darth Vader Obi-Wan Kenobi battle. And if you listened to the podcast last week, you heard me say, oh, these two probably aren't going to like face off until episode 6. This is not, just settle down. This isn't going to happen. And then instead, here we get, Lauren, a giant battle in episode 3. Were you surprised after I led you astray last week?
No, as soon as I saw that this morning, I was like, well, Dalton was wrong about that. But I don't know how surprised I was that, like, I thought if they're going to bring Hayden Christensen back, you should use him. So I assumed he was going to be in the episode somewhat, but I didn't realize that they would be crossing lightsabers as soon as the third episode. Though Obi-Wan really did try to avoid that lightsaber fight as much as he could, because he just literally fleed. Like, as soon as he saw Darth, he just like took off. And I was like, it's not the Obi-Wan I quite remember.
Like multiple times he ran away. There was like multiple stations.
Like, he literally just saw him and he was like, I'm going to go this way. And it just was like, yoink. I didn't really think it was a really interesting, like, the fight. It's definitely not up to their battle on Mustafar. But I thought it was really interesting because you see exactly what kind of mind space Obi-Wan is in. And he is not in Jedi Knight shape. This is not the guy who was in the Clone Wars, you know, fighting alongside all those clone troopers. He was kind of a shadow of himself almost.
Devin, what was your sort of big picture take on the battle?
I was also surprised that we got a lightsaber battle this early in the story. And I was like, kind of like giddy. I was like, oh my God, it's Darth Vader. He's back. He's on my screen. You know, I love the way the fight was choreographed and that it is kind of one of my biggest questions, you know, sort of with this sort of arc of Star Wars is you've got that great Mustafar battle with like flips and spins and crazy stuff. And then you've got the A New Hope battle where it's kind of just two guys standing there hitting lightsabers at each other. And I feel like this sort of gives a narrative example of like how those fighting styles have evolved. You know, this isn't the Obi-Wan who was top of his game, young Jedi doing backflips like little tiny Yoda. You know, this is, he's an older guy. He's out of practice. He's out of touch with the Force and he doesn't want to fight Anakin. One of the things that I really admired about Ewan's performance here is you get how terrified he is. I thought he was going to give some sort of quip, you know, because he's a very quippy guy, but like you just see the terror in his eyes. And I thought Ewan's performance in this was really incredible.
Yeah, I asked both of them, Hayden and Ewan specifically, about what you mentioned, Devin, about like, well, I don't, you know, how do you like get from what we saw in, you know, episodes 1, 2, and 3 to like episode 4. There's not a lot of movement going on in that New Hope battle. And they kind of dodged the question, but yeah, you did sort of see, I mean, look, Obi-Wan looks weak. He looks straight up weak. And outside of kind of like saving Leia when she was falling in Dayu, like putting his hand out and saving her from falling, which by the way, looked like it was not easy for him to do. Like he was sweating. There were beads of sweat just to do that. That's pretty much, other than taking out those stormtroopers at the checkpoint, that's pretty much the only sort of Jedi activity we've seen from him, and we know he cut himself off from the Force for a while there, but man, he's like, is it just that he has not been training because he buried his lightsabers in the sand? Or is it that he, this battle with Vader, he's just so mentally distraught about having to go over and do this all over again? Remember, he didn't want to go to Mustafar. He didn't even want to take him on the first time. Now he thinks he has to do it again. But man, Vader definitely got the better of him. And Vader, super badass. And when I talked to Hayden Christensen, and you can listen to that interview on last week's podcast, he mentioned Rogue One. Like he brought, and that scene where he's walking through the town, just like choking and dragging people, that basically felt like this series was like version of that Rogue One scene, right? Like that's the same thing that's happening. People are like screaming. They're being thrown up against walls. He's like dragging people on the ground. That was super badass, Lauren.
It really was. And it was like, I am going to take no prisoner. I mean, and this is like definitely before Rogue One. So he's not quite even at his Rogue One power level yet. If you think about it, like Obi-Wan just found out that Anakin was alive, like basically the night before. I don't know how long that transport between Dayu and Mapuzo was. And now he has to face him. You know, Obi-Wan was not prepared, but it seems like Anakin was thinking, or, I mean, I guess I should call him Darth Vader. You know, even Anakin thinks himself is dead. But, you know, he was preparing for this for a long time. And it seemed like he knew exactly what he was planning to do to Obi-Wan. Versus Obi-Wan just being completely off his game.
So Vader is just like basically toying with Obi-Wan at one point, right? He could have choked him out. Mm-hmm. Then he could have burned him to death. It's almost like a James Bond villain. Like, well, let me tell you my plan before I kill you. You know, like, and then Vader, I went back and watched it like 4 times. I'm like, wait a minute. How did Obi-Wan get out of the fire? And Vader pushes him out of the fire and says something to the effect of, I don't know the exact line, but your pain has just begun. So he clearly wants to draw it out.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like he even like kind of extinguished the fire with the Force, which I did not know was a Force ability. So that's a new one for me. And I was just like, yeah, he's like just really toying with him at this point. That was like kind of brutal when he was dragging him through the fire. But I was like, oh, he's really pissed that Obi-Wan just let him catch on fire on Mustafar. Not even the legs and the hands like those going, but the whole just leaving him to burn.
Lauren,
to death
he warned really him pissed. He had the high ground. I mean,
I know. But you would think, you know, at least, you know, Obi-Wan would have dragged him out of the flake of fire. But I think it's also like interesting because not only are they meeting for the first time, but Obi-Wan knows that he has Anakin's daughter with him. So it's like, not only does he have to like try and survive for himself, but he has to prevent Leia from falling into his clutches, which didn't work.
Devin, do you think that we're getting another lightsaber battle between these two?
I feel like this can't be it.
I agree.
This ended, you know, there needs to be some sort of, there's not going to be a resolution because we know how this ends. We know that's the oldest story in the book of how, you know, Obi-Wan meets his end, but there's got to be some sort of other resolution there. This was not the last time we have seen these two together. Because you don't cast Hayden Christensen and bring him back for one episode. How did you guys feel about hearing James Earl Jones again? That was a pleasant surprise.
I was glad because they were being really cagey about who it was.
Yeah,
they were being really cagey about who it was. And it was interesting, though, because like his voice, I wondered if they had done some of the audio work that they had done in Luke's voice, because I remember hearing him in Rogue One and being like, this sounds like a much older Darth Vader. But here he sounded like crisp and like clean. So I was just curious about that.
It also had more personality and emotion than that super robotic sounding Mark Hamill. I mean, I guess robotic's not the right word, but yeah. Like it was emotionless.
I mean, that wasn't even really Mark Hamill's voice, but it did sound like they had done something here to kind of de-age his voice.
The weird thing
bit.
Is, so I asked them about this one back in March or whatever, when I was doing the cover story and they wouldn't answer it. And then I asked Deborah Chow, the director, about it. What, like the day before it premiered? And she still wouldn't answer it. But you figure that, like in February, maybe they didn't have it locked down, right? A voice you can put in late. Maybe they're still trying to figure it out. Are we getting James Earl Jones or not? Are we going to do a sound alike? What are we going to do? But by the day before, they knew, and yet they still wouldn't say, which just led me to think, oh, it's not going to be him. It's going to be something else. And then when I spoke to Hayden Christensen, again, you can hear it on last week's episode, I said, what sound do you make? Like when you're speaking your dialogue that they're going to replace later, are you trying to sound like James Earl Jones? He goes, no, I try and sound like the way Anakin would sound with like being injured and tortured. So I think he does a completely different voice. I was like, maybe they'll use that. Like maybe his like voice box doesn't.
I would love to hear that voice. Yeah. Like I would love to hear what like that it is before it turns into James Earl Jones. Cause I think that's probably a very interesting aspect of the performance.
Well, there was that interesting moment in this episode where Obi-Wan sort of has a hallucination of Anakin.
Oh, yeah.
Where of sort of what Anakin would look like if he was, had not been injured and not turned into Darth Vader. And it's just a glimpse. But, you know, we see Hayden Christensen's, you know, and he's got the yellow eyes and the long hair. I would not be surprised if we see some sort of, whether it's like a force meeting or like a hallucination or something, I would not be surprised if we see some sort of conversation between those two where Hayden looks like Anakin, whether it's something in Obi-Wan's mind or it's a hallucination like that. But I feel like that was intentional, sort of laying that groundwork. Because, you know, I mean, for Obi-Wan to look at his old friend, I mean, that must be crazy to see him in this crazy, you know, helmet and getup. But he looks at him and does he see the little Padawan he used to know? So I would be very curious to see whether they take that road going forward.
And he's already hearing voices. We hear him hear lots of voices, although I keep waiting for Qui-Gon to show up, right? Like what is that happening?
Since Liam Neeson has actually reprised his role in like the Clone Wars, I feel like he's going to like show up at one point because I feel like the reason why he can't connect to Qui-Gon right now is because he's so shut off from the Force. And especially, I feel like he's going to have to like have that moment that Rey had in Force Awakens when she connects to the Force in the forest before she kicks Kylo's ass. That's what I'm sort of expecting, that Obi-Wan is going to like fully reconnect to the Force. And maybe that's when Qui-Gon shows up.
Prediction time. Do we see Qui-Gon or just hear Qui-Gon?
I think we'll see him.
You think we'll see him?
At least that's what
Force
I
ghost?
Think. But maybe.
You calling out Force Ghost right here?
I am calling out a Force Ghost.
Devin, what do you think?
I think they've just been so, this is the second time he has like explicitly been like, Qui-Gon, help me. Where are you? That's Chekhov's Force Ghost right there. I don't think they would be foreshadowing it as much as they are. Not even foreshadowing, just like explicitly being like, Qui-Gon, where are you? I need you. If they're not going to pay that off. We'll see. I don't know. They may surprise us.
Let's talk about another Jedi that made a sort of debut of sorts here when he's going, when Obi-Wan's been led into the path by Tala, he sees a message from Quinlan Voss. And we'll let Lauren give us the full lowdown. Quinlan was a Jedi who had some sexy time with the Saj Ventress. he tried to kill Dooku, instead said, oh, let me join Dooku. Then he went back to the good guys.
He's a very interesting character, kind of played back and forth on, you know, sometimes dark side, sometimes light side. But as soon as Obi-Wan was in that sort of safe room and he saw Quinlan was here, and I was like, well, there aren't that many Jedi named Quinlan, you know, so I was just sort of like, oh, so I guess he's another Jedi that survived. Or I don't know if he's been killed since he left the message, but that was kind of a nice shout out, because I don't really think that, you know, on our list of Jedis that have survived Kanan and Ahsoka and Yoda, now we can add Quinlan, that he managed to survive Order 66 as well.
And I'm guessing that's going to be O'Shea Jackson. That's my prediction right now. We know O'Shea Jackson's on the show. We don't know who he's playing. So my guess is we're going to see him as Quinlan, which I guess technically, I think he's like in a scene, like sitting down in the Phantom Menace in Tatooine. So I guess it wouldn't be his live. It's kind of like Chopper, I guess. Isn't Chopper's live action was in like Rogue One? He's in like the background shots.
He rolled through a scene. So technically he's been on camera before.
Let's talk about the other sort of new characters that actually we did see, not just a name on a wall, but actual people. And we mentioned Freck. Freck was an alien sort of mole man type situation voiced by Zach Braff. I kind of found this character interesting because it's like an Imperial, I don't know if you call it sympathizer, ally, comrade, whatever terminology you want to use, who's not like some sneering, super evil person with a British. It just seems like, hey, yeah, hop in the back. It's all good. Let's do this. And then, but yet still is loyal to the Empire.
I got to say, my favorite thing about, you know, all of the Star Wars shows is every week there's an absolutely insane cameo. Episodes 1 and 2, it was like, oh, Flea is in this. Sure. Book of Boba Fett. It was like, oh, here's Danny Trejo as the Rancor keeper.
Or Steven Root showed up, you know.
Yeah, or Matt Berry.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the funny thing with my husband didn't watch the first 2 episodes until Sunday. And I was just kind of watching along him. And I just heard him quietly when the kidnapper was revealed. He just goes, Flea? And I was like, yep. <It's> he just looks quietly. He was just like, what's he doing here?
There was something delightful about seeing Flea's names in the credits in that iconic blue font on the star background. And it just says, Flea. Like, something about that delighted me.
And Flea was in the Big Lebowski. He's shown up in other
Back to the Future franchise.
He was a Baby Driver.
Like, he has shown up in other things, but you know, it was a little bit like when they revealed him, I was like, huh, wouldn't have thought of that one. But
yeah, for Freck it was the same thing. I was like, okay, this voice cameo, this has to be somebody I know. And then, but I didn't clock that it was Zach Braff until the credits, and I was like, huh, Scrub star and Garden State director Zach Braff. Good for you. Welcome to the Star Wars universe. Oh, we heard female stormtroopers, which yes. I think was...
Oh, yeah, I noticed that too.
Was something that we hadn't really heard in this sort of era before of Star Wars, which was something that was interesting. You can sort of see the shift from, you know, using clones to having these stormtroopers. And it's kind of interesting because, you know, in the original trilogy, the stormtroopers and specifically the Imperial officers are all very intentionally portrayed as stiff upper lip white British men with very strong British accents. And so it's interesting to see some of these characters who are women. We see aliens, we see, you know, different kinds of people aligning with the Empire. And that's sort of an interesting thing that we haven't really seen. We got that in the sequel trilogy, but not so much in things that are set around this time.
And what do you guys make of the flip side? Because we had Indira Varma, who, you know, we saw her in the trailer looking very stern and very imperial, like, right, walking off into the sand. And then about 4 seconds into her debut, we realize that she's actually a double agent working with Kumail Nanjiani. What'd you guys make of her character, Tala?
I'm a big fan of Indira Varma. I've interviewed her a couple times for Game of Thrones. I love the idea that she and Pedro Pascal are both now part of the Star Wars universe. I liked the idea of the smuggling ring of people who are, you know, working to protect Force-sensitive people and Jedi. And I'm curious, like, you know, how did this get started? How did she and Kumail get this going? Like, I was surprised by how many names were carved into the walls. You know, how many people have gone through there? I'm curious to see where that goes.
Do you remember at Entertainment Weekly, we used to do set breakdowns? We'd do a big spread in the magazine and we'd call out and like little things in the set. Like, I would love to have seen that set with all the etchings on the walls and just like little Easter eggs, I'm sure, all over the place that we just didn't pick up on.
Yeah, my Arabash is not what it should be. I can't quite translate it just by sight.
I think I did notice the Republic symbol. Like, Leia went to look at it, and it looked like it was either the Republic symbol or the symbol of the rebellion carved into it.
I got one other thing I want to touch on before we get to our interview with the cast. Generally, what do you all think of the episode? I thought it was a really strong episode. I thought the action was great. I mean, I thought we got a lot more than I was expecting to get. Like I said, I thought we'd get Vader. I didn't think we'd get Vader and Obi-Wan in the same location, much less fighting this early. So I was pretty pleased. What about you, Devin?
I felt similarly. I, going into this, thought, okay, the Vader, Obi-Wan, they're going to sort of dance around each other for the whole season, and that's going to be the finale. And so the fact that we've gotten in this early is very intriguing to me, and it raises a lot of questions about what the next three episodes are going to look like, because we're halfway through after three episodes.
Isn't that weird?
So it's crazy since we got a two of them last week. So I'm very, very curious to see sort of how things shake out. Again, there's characters we haven't met yet. We haven't met O'Shea Jackson Jr. Where I thought things were going, it's not going. So now I'm like, okay, where is it going?
What about you, Lauren?
Outside of the Darth Vader stuff, I really am enjoying the interaction between Obi-Wan and Leia, or baby Leia, as I like to call her. What I find really moving is how much she's yearning for her to know anything about her birth parents, like how much she's yearning to know about Padme or to know about Anakin. Like when she asked him, "Are you my real father?" And he was just like, "No, I mean, I wish you were." And you never really think about that as she gets older. And later in the book, she really does identify as an Organa and as a person from Alderaan. But at this like kind of tender moment, you really see how much she's just sort of yearning to know anything about her birth parents. And I find that really moving. And I think she and Ewan McGregor have like just this wonderful chemistry between the two of them. The other thing that I found really curious is the whole thing with the Grand Inquisitor.
Okay, this is what I want to get to.
It's like, yeah.
Lauren is trying to find an out. She's trying to find an excuse. Let me set the table
for
what's going on. So we watched the first two episodes of Obi-Wan Kenobi last week. And near the very end of the episode, all of a sudden, Reva puts a lightsaber right into the chest of the Grand Inquisitor, which I'm like, say what? Because the Grand Inquisitor is around roughly 4 years later in Star Wars Rebels, plays a huge role in season one of Star Wars Rebels. And I even spoke to Rupert Friend, and you can hear it on last week's podcast. I'm like, dude, we know you're making out of here alive because you're in the show in 4 years. He's like, yep. And so then they seemingly kill him. Lauren last week's like, maybe his like organs are in different places and he's not dead, but they're talking about him like he's really dead.
But they never technically said he was dead. They just kind of cut him off. So it's like, does he have a twin brother that's played by Jason Isaacs? Like, you know, is this just a title and not a name?
Yeah, so Lauren texts me this morning. She goes, maybe it seems to be a title and not a name because Reva's talking to Vader and, you know, she wants to be the next Grand Inquisitor. So it's just a name. Fine. But the thing is, go back last week and listen to my interview with Rupert Friend. He talks about his character's backstory and he uses all the same identifiers as the Rebels Grand Inquisitor. It's like, oh, well, you know, he was a Jedi and he in the Jedi Temple and, you know, like training people. And like, it's the same backstory. So unfortunately, Devin's conversation with the cast and Deborah Chow took place mere hours before she watched this episode. So we haven't been able to get an official answer on this. But Lauren, I mean, are they messing with the timeline? Did this week's episode change what you think at all?
The only thing I could think of is that a lot of times in Star Wars Rebels, he wasn't called the Grand Inquisitor. He was called the Inquisitor. And so I'm thinking that like maybe there was another, like, are they called Pawlins? The alien race from Utapau where he's from. And I'm just like, is there another one who's force sensitive? And like, is Jason Isaacs going to show up in the finale? Like, there's like so many things where I'm like, it's such a huge, like, if this was the person from Star Wars Rebels, this is the kind, and he's dead. That is a huge violation of canon. And when they were talking about that, you know, you'll become the Grand Inquisitor, I'm like, okay, it's a title. Maybe there's another person from Utapau. But the fact is they didn't say he was dead, so he could very well just be in a back to tank right now. I don't know. It was kind of a crazy decision either way.
Yeah. See, I think, you know, if Maul can get chopped in half and stitched back together, you know, we know in this universe that a lightsaber to the chest is not always the death sentence that it appears to be.
That is true. That is true.
But it's bizarre, and I'm curious to see where it goes.
I know. I need answers. I don't like it. I need to get answers. So we got to get to the bottom of that. But yeah, we're halfway home. We got 3 episodes left. Cannot wait to see what happens moving forward. All right, we have Devin's interview with the cast of Obi-Wan Kenobi, Ewan McGregor, Hayden Christensen, Moses Ingram, Rupert Friend, and director Deborah Chow, and we'll play that for you right after this quick break.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thank you guys so much for taking the time to talk with me. I'm so excited to talk to you guys about Obi-Wan. Ewan, I'd love to start with you. You know, this is a version of Obi-Wan that, this is set, several years after Revenge of the Sith. What makes this version of Obi-Wan different from the man that we may have seen in the past?
Well, he's a more broken character than we've ever seen him before. We see at the end of Revenge of the Sith that everything he's known and worked for and worked towards is destroyed. His Jedi order that he loves and believes in is torn apart. All his friends are either killed or gone into hiding. So he's very, very much alone and lost. And also he's carrying this amazing guilt because he feels that he lost his brother to the dark side and that he should have been able to see that was going to happen and stop that from happening. So he's not only grieving, he's also feeling responsible for losing his brother. So it's a much darker, more broken place than we've ever seen the character before, either with me or Alec Guinness.
And Hayden, you've played a little bit of Vader, but not quite to this extent before. What was it like to sort of throw yourself into playing, kind of full Vader?
Yeah, I mean, that was certainly what was so exciting about this opportunity. Obviously, when we did the prequels, my work was as Anakin, and I got to, get my feet wet a little bit as Darth Vader, but getting to come back and put a little bit more of my fingerprint on the character at this point in the timeline was just an incredible opportunity.
Yeah, and Deborah, I know you've talked about how one of the things that first drew you to this show was that relationship, that friendship between Obi-Wan and Anakin. What was it about the idea of exploring that relationship that really, really excited you?
I think, there were a few things, like getting to do a limited series and having more time to really get into character was really exciting about the show. And then I think also the idea of getting to take these very huge, iconic characters, but to tell a story about them at a different point in their lives.
Absolutely. And Moses, what about you? What was it that most excited you about joining this galaxy?
Oh, definitely the writing. I think the first time I was really able to read it, it just felt like Pantheon acting a lot of the moments. And that was really exciting for me. And then to join it with, these people, veterans, it was a really, really dope experience.
What about you, Rupert? What was it that most excited you about joining this story?
I was aware of the character, but I knew that the Grand Inquisitor had never been portrayed in the live action world. So working with Deb to bring him to life in that space was just thrilling. It felt like a birth of some kind.
I know you talked on stage about getting to brush up on your lightsaber skills. How was it to throw yourself into that?
Well, it's amazing because, I might have this twin-ended thing, and it was utterly beautiful. It was, handmade by the team, and it was a very kind of quite a moving moment to be handed a lightsaber, and certainly was for me.
What about you, Moses? What was it? What was most exciting about throwing yourself into lightsaber training?
It was just really nice because I think particularly with Jedi schools, I didn't know what I would be doing every day. I mean, I knew I would be sweating and doing all the things, but we ran across walls. I was hanging in wires. It was just playing real hard at the playground, It's cool.
Did you guys get any advice from your, your Jedi expert co-stars on lightsaber training?
We all got great advice from our fight coordinator, yeah. Jojo, who took the fights that we did in the prequels and redesigned them forward in time. It was very thoughtful, his work, and he and his team were just brilliant to work out with, That was important in these things, is the the action sequences require a lot of stamina and fitness. So that was part of the lead up to this, was some months spent working out with those guys and working out on our, with our trainers and getting to a sort of fitness level so that we could get the work done really during the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I know you guys have talked about how, you know, there's a very acrobatic quality to it that's required, and like you studying different types of, you know, like martial arts and sort of different styles.
Yeah, like elements of like parkour and really just getting down and dirty. JoJo says train hard, fight easy, you know? Like if you run 40 feet one time, I mean, you got to turn around and get that 40 feet from like different angles and different lenses. And so after about the 10th time, you're really grateful you've built up that stamina.
That makes sense, absolutely. And Ewan and Hayden, what do you guys remember about your first day on set together? What stuck out to you guys the most?
Just seeing him again as Obi-Wan. I mean, it was just such a thrilling sight. We got together a little bit before we started filming just to catch up. But seeing him again as this character was mind-blowing. Mm-hmm.
For both of us, it was amazing. The atmosphere on set was really electric that day. I came on set and I'd been shooting for a little while before Hayden started, and I couldn't believe how many people were there. I was looking around going, so many people on set today. I couldn't figure out what was going on. And then the penny clicked when you walked out in the suit. I was like, oh yeah, everyone's here to see Hayden and as Vader, you know. It's pretty amazing on set.
Yeah, it's like, well, you're like, well, what about me? It's all about him.
Yeah, they were so used to me by that point. And they're totally over me.
Absolutely. And Rupert and Moses, was there anything, what surprised you the most about joining the Star Wars universe?
Working with the volume was a very extraordinary experience, and Deb very sweetly invited me to come and check out something else that was being shot, because if you haven't seen it before, there's nothing like it, and it can be a bit like being on a sort of mad roller coaster, you know, as the world adapts to the cameras. But and it's just extraordinary, the level of detail. You can see people in the deep, deep background miles away who normally would be extras or whatever, and they've all been designed with inner lives and stories, and it's all going on all around you all the time.
I think for me, I've never worked on a project similar to what you were saying, but to a different point, with so many people. Like, it literally takes hundreds of people to make this happen, like, on a day-to-day, and then in post-production, in pre-production, like, it's a rallying of people who this wouldn't be possible without.
That makes a difference, absolutely. And Ewan, I know you talked on stage about, you know, one of the joys over the last couple of years has been seeing the fondness and the adoration for these prequels. What's it been like for you to, you know, sort of see, to be here at Star Wars Celebration and see that fondness and love for these stories?
Yeah, it's important for me. I feel like I'm able to sort of claim it in a way, which I don't know that I've ever done properly. I feel like there was a sort of challenge to making the films with the technology that George was utilizing at the time. There was a lot of blue screen and green screen to allow him to build the worlds that he built. But for us, the actors, it was hard to make emotional moments realistic when you're surrounded by nothing and oftentimes speaking to nothing. You know, your scene partner is a tennis ball and a stick. It's just hard work. And for that, I was just saying to Henry, like, no one sort of phoned it in. We all came with our A games. We all tried our best. And then for it to be sort of, for the critics not to like them, or I don't know, the noise that came at us afterwards wasn't positive. So I feel like I maybe put my blinkers on a little bit to the Star Wars world to an extent and just went on with my career. And I've been lucky to do the work I've done. But I did play Obi-Wan Kenobi in the prequels, and I liked what we did, and I liked the experience of doing it, you know. And so I'm really glad to stand on that stage this morning and feel that. It was important for me to feel that and to go, oh, no, I should be able to enjoy it, you know.
Yeah, Hayden, what about you? What's that been experience like to see this love and this joy for these stories and these films?
It's just so heartwarming. I've always sort of felt that the fans got it. You know, that was sort of never in question for me. But certainly, you know, the critics wanted to find all the flaws that they could. And if you're looking for flaws in anything, I mean, you'll find something. But, you know, these stories are for the fans, and they're meant to bring joy and happiness to people. And so it means a lot to to get to sort of witness that now, and to the degree that we do, it's amazing.
Absolutely. Deborah, how much were you going back to the prequels and sort of using that for inspiration? I mean, how much were you thinking about those as you were crafting this story?
Definitely the most closely tied to the prequels, particularly Revenge of the Sith. So all through development, all through the script process, we were always going back and, you know, really studying it. In large part, we're looking at the character arcs and, you know, everything that's happened. So the prequels were our main point of reference.
Absolutely. So for any of you guys, what was the day on set where you geeked out the most? What was like the one that like sticks out in your mind where you were just the most excited to be there?
I think being in Mos Eisley, like being in the bar and seeing the place where we've all can hear the music start to play and the, you know, you see that scene. So standing in it under that baking sun for those days, that was it for me.
I can't pick. I had too many good days on there. I can't pick one.
That's fair. You're making a Star Wars show. I mean, I imagine every day is going to be pretty memorable.
Yeah.
And I know you guys talked a little while ago to my colleague, Dalton Ross, and he told me a story that Moses was telling him a story about how, you dropped your lightsaber a couple times. And Hayden, you that made you laugh quite a bit to hear that story because he's so serious about, you know, taking care of his lightsaber. What was your reaction to hearing that?
Yeah, I definitely got a bit of a chuckle out of that. I mean, you know, the lightsaber is just such a cherished weapon. And, you know, Obi-Wan would always give Anakin such a hard time whenever he misplaced it or dropped it. And that kind of, you know, narrative continued offset too. If we were training and, you know, someone lost a lightsaber, you know, you'd hear it. So I rejoiced a little bit when I heard that. It made me laugh.
He's a bit rusty on the lightsaber, Obi-Wan. It was real deep character work. You know, they just don't see it.
It was intentional. He's been away from the Jedi Order for so long. You know,
no, I think I dropped it and I said to Moses, don't tell him.
And the thing is, I'm upset because when I spoke to Dalton, he said that he would say that it didn't come from him. And here we are.
That'll teach you to open up to a journalist about anything.
No one's safe.
It's been spelled, absolutely. So, Deborah, what do you think has been your biggest challenge on this show overall?
I think definitely the legacy characters. And just, you know, we're obviously in between two trilogies. Where everybody knows what happened before and after. So that's been the biggest challenge, is just trying to find the balance of also telling a new story, but respecting that legacy.
Absolutely. What about you, Ewan? What was the biggest challenge in telling the story?
I thought it was just great. I didn't have any difficulties. It was just brilliant working with Deborah. It was so good working with the new technology. The casting was great. The crew were great. We had a real passion in the crew for Star Wars, but also for this story. And you felt it from them every day, all day. It was just great fun. There's nothing that I could answer that question with, I don't think.
That's always good. What about you, Hayden? What was the biggest difference about, you know, making the first time around making those films versus telling this story?
I mean, you know, obviously it's a different group of people. We have a different storyteller. And I don't know. I think for me, the whole experience was relatively challenge free, and that's to Deborah's credit. You know, she just understands this world so well and these characters and just kind of made it really easy for all of us.
Absolutely.
Okay, so interviewing those folks was not the only cool thing Devin did at Celebration. She will give us her full report from the Star Wars convention right after this super quick break.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I mean, so I'm a I'm a pretty jealous person by nature, just to begin with. Like, if I'm going to be completely honest. And I've probably never been more jealous than the fact that Devin got to go to Celebration and I was sitting home in New Jersey, a few miles Same. Away from Lauren. And I was trying everything to make it happen, but I just had some other work stuff and so couldn't make it. But you just heard the incredible interview Devin did with the whole cast and with Deborah Chower. Moses Ingram called me out a little bit. And that wasn't the only thing she did there, though. She was interviewing all sorts of casts. She was going to all sorts of panels. She was just checking out all the cosplaying going on and all the booths and everything. So obviously a lot of news came out of Star Wars Celebration, Devin. So we thought you could just sort of hit us up with what you either see as the biggest things that came out of there or the coolest things you did, or just what are the big bullet points we need to know about your time in Anaheim?
Yeah, it was a blast. I haven't been back to any sort of large
con. Don't say it was a blast. I just said I'm jealous. I just told you.
It was terrible. Dalton, you're so lucky you missed it. You know, Lauren, you would have hated it. It was awful. No, I had a blast. I mean, it is... Star Wars fans are some of the weirdest and best people in the whole world. I saw some of the greatest cosplays, just the pure joy of everybody. One, you know, just the joy to be together and celebrating Star Wars. But also, I think there, you know, we haven't had a Star Wars celebration in several years and due to the pandemic. And there was just everybody was so excited to be there and particularly hyped about this new chapter of everything that's going on in Star Wars. And the interesting thing was, you know, pretty much with the exclusion of here and there, I mean, almost everything was focused on TV and Disney Plus. This is something sort of new for Star Wars Celebration. Has sort of historically all been about Skywalker saga and movies. But this was, I mean, the stars of the show were, you know, Obi-Wan and Andor and The Mandalorian and all of these exciting things. So I'm going to take you through my top five highlights between, you know, sort of panels and interviews. Number one is obviously, surprisingly, Obi-Wan Kenobi. This was the actual premiere of both episodes. We got to see them a little bit early. They had an actual like red carpet premiere at Celebration.
Yeah, where they brought out, you're know, killing me right now, Devin.
They brought out Ewan and Hayden and the whole cast. But then, you know, like O'Shea Jackson was there and they brought out Vivian Lyra Blair, who got a huge standing ovation after we got to see the episodes. Everybody immediately fell in love with her. Actually, they kicked off on Thursday, the big Lucasfilm panel where they sort of ran down all the things that Lucasfilm has in the works. They kicked it off with a big full choir performing Duel of the Fates. And then afterwards, Hayden and Ewan came out and the first words spoken were Ewan looked at the audience and goes, hello there. And the place just went nuts. Everybody was screaming and running around. I mean, it was amazing because this was the audience for that. And this is something that, you know, Hayden and Ewan talked about, and they talked about this in our interview, is what it means to them to be returning and have this love from the fandom after the prequels. And so I think when I spoke to them, they came through our video suite after getting off stage at Cut Celebration. And I think they were both like a little giddy. They were overwhelmed and so happy to see so many people talk about what these movies mean to them and how much people specifically connected with their stories. So I think that was definitely a highlight for me. It's kind of this lovely full circle moment for them. And then there was a ton of news about other upcoming projects, too. They ran down some of the upcoming shows that we've got. One of them is Andor, which I'm very excited for. We've got Diego Luna back as Cassian Andor and Genevieve O'Reilly, who's back as Mon Mothma. So we got to see the first trailer from that.
What'd you think of that, Devin? Because Lauren and I talked about that last week and we liked it, but we were kind of like, there's not a lot of Andor in the Andor trailer. He's like barely in that thing.
Yeah, it was interesting. The creator is Tony Gilroy, who did all the Bourne movies, and he worked on Rogue One. And he talked on stage about how, you know, this is a two-season thing. The first season is set about 5 years before Rogue One. He and Diego both said this many times that, you know, this is not the Cassian that you know in Rogue One. He is not the gung-ho rebel willing to lay his life on the line. He is very much, he doesn't want to be a part of this. He's not interested in the rebellion. He's sort of a scoundrel running away from things. And they sort of said, you know, his and Mon Mothma's paths, they don't really cross, but they sort of run parallel. And you sort of see her like, you know, in the Senate and, you know, doing more political things while he's sort of more on the ground. And then it'll be season two where, you know, things start to coalesce. That's when your boy K2SO is supposed to show up.
Let's
not going to be in
Let's
season
go.
One, but he's coming back in season two. They said that's going to start filming in November. And so I'm kind of glad that they're saying, okay, you know, this isn't a one season deal. We've already got plans for season two. this is the path because we know how it ends. You know, Diego Luna made a great joke. He's like, it's the best job security I've ever had because I know they can't kill me off.
That's what the Grand Inquisitor thought too.
They're going to kill Cassian twice. But that was one that I was really excited for, and they released that trailer wide. But then we also got to see a lot of footage at Celebration that they did not release to the general public. One of those is The Mandalorian. Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau were there. We got to see a little bit on Thursday, but we got to see even more on Saturday, which was the full Mandalorian panel where they brought out, you know, Pedro Pascal and Katie Sackhoff and Giancarlo Esposito and Carl Weathers and you know, basically the whole cast. And they talked about season 3. We got to see a little bit of footage where we see, you know, the armorer played by Emily Swallow sort of chastising Din and basically being like, you are no longer Mandalorian. You have willingly removed your helmet. And we see Din sort of saying, I'm seeking redemption. I'm going to go to Mandalore to seek forgiveness and to try to, you know, reconnect with that. And we saw the ruins of what appeared to be Mandalore, as well as, you know, definitely Bo-Katan seems to be playing a very large role in season 3. You know, there's definitely some friction between her and Din after the whole Darksaber business. Other highlights, Babu Frick. We saw a bunch of little Babu Fricks. I'm not sure if it's the same Babu Frick, but it sure looked like
Nick Romano will be so pleased.
Hey. So, and then we saw a tree of what looks like Kowakian monkey lizards, basically a tree full of salacious bee crumbs. And I was like, I don't know what's going on there, but I'm totally here for it.
That's a lot of laughing. We're going to have to listen to.
Instead of a tree full of monkeys, it's a tree full of Kowakian monkey lizards. You know, who crashed the Mandalorian panel was Rosario Dawson for Ahsoka. Earlier in Celebration, she taped a pre-recorded message saying, you know, I'm filming Ahsoka. We've been filming for 3 weeks. I'm so sorry I can't make it. But she wound up showing up on Saturday and she came out wearing some very Ahsoka looking earrings, which were kind of stripy and cool. And she basically talked about how it's going. It's super early days. They've only been filming for about 3 weeks, but she brought out basically the live action version of Chopper, who was going to be in Ahsoka. And we got to see him roll across the stage. And then she brought out Natasha Liu Bordizzo, who's going to be playing Sabine Wren, another Rebels character, making her debut in live action. Lauren, what was that? What excited you most about, you know, bringing Sabine into live action?
You know, it was interesting because I was away from my phone for a while. I can't remember if my kid had it or something. And when I came back, it was like, I think an hour after the panel, and I saw Dalton had texted me about Sabine. And I was like, hold on, what? And I had to go and take a look. I know that was a rumor, so I'm really excited about that. And I know you also mentioned that they showed at least, it looks like the back of Hera Syndulla, which I'm very excited about. And I'm curious if that's what the role that Mary Elizabeth Winstead is rumored to be playing, and that this might be the search for Ezra Bridger. So it seems like this is a real continuation of where they left off in Star Wars Rebels. So I love Star Wars Rebels, so I am very happy to see the entire crew, including my beloved Chopper, in live action. Like, it's really exciting to see. I wish we got to see the footage that they showed you, so I'm still very jealous.
Oh, I saw it. I found that pirated footage online. If there's a will, there's a way.
I haven't looked for the illegal footage yet.
Looked for that illegal footage.
I should go to Tumblr. They probably have it all over the place.
It's probably already gifed somewhere.
I mean, they've only been filming for like a few days or something. I mean, it's like crazy if they even had anything to show. And it's not even a scene. It's just literally like shots that they showed. But it looked pretty awesome.
It looked really cool. And like you said, you know, it feels like this is a very much a continuation of Rebels. Yeah. You know, we see Sabine looking at the mural with Ezra. Mm-hmm. You know, we've heard Ahsoka talk about Thrawn before. I think this is definitely, this seems like a definite continuation.
Because, I mean, where Thrawn and where Ezra is, like, they're the two biggest sort of unsolved mysteries in that timeline about where both of them wound up leading off to.
And Star Wars does not like to keep mysteries as mysteries. They like to answer every mystery or every question that you've ever had. I mean, and so, like, it is going back to watch Rebels. If you've never watched it, really does make sense because, you know, obviously Dave Filoni coming from the animated world, and now he is the influential figure in the live action Disney Plus world now. So all these people are coming over, and then you even look at something like Andor, which doesn't seem to have a Rebels connection, but it's literally taking place at the exact same time that Rebels takes place. And for instance, you know, we learn on that, like, that's where Mon Mothma quits the Senate right around that time on Rebels, in a Rebels episode. So is that going to carry over to Andor? It should be pretty interesting to see.
And even going back to this last episode of Obi-Wan, where we were seeing Tala and talking about like sort of the burgeoning rebellion and how they're already, I mean, it's 10 years in and there's already these safe houses and there's already these people trying to connect all of these like mini rebellions together. And that was like an interesting thing about Star Wars Rebels, is because they were kind of working on their own for a long time until they kind of connected up into the big rebellion. So seeing these kind of like these like little embers of the rebellion, I find pretty fascinating.
Yeah, that was something that was really interesting. Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau both came through EW's interview studio, and we're going to have the full interviews with them going up later. But that was something they talked about, where, you know, they're sort of building this. We saw it with Book of Boba Fett, where it sort of turned into, you know, Mandalorian season 2.5. And now we're going to have Ahsoka and this new show co-created by Spider-Man director John Watts called Skeleton Crew, which is about a group of, you know, young, like 10-year-old kids who are sort of lost in the galaxy. They announced that Jude Law is going to be in it. They confirmed that that is set during the same time period as The Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett and Ahsoka and all these shows that are happening. So it seems like tonally all the shows are sort of different, but it definitely, there's going to be a lot of crossover. I think the thing that it reminds me the most of is sort of like comic book issues, where you sort of, you've got your general runs and then they sort of like come together for a crossover and then they sort of split off and you kind of have weird team ups here and there. So I'm really curious to see sort of what the next couple of years look like, because it's, you know, instead of building, you know, this like main Skywalker film saga with a couple spinoffs here and there, they're really building this huge, basically sort of giving the Marvel Cinematic Universe a run for their money, you know, specifically with Star Wars television series.
Hmm. Anything else from the convention of note?
The final one for me, and the probably the personal highlight for me, was Thursday during the Lucasfilm panel. They brought out John Williams celebrating his 90th birthday, and he conducted a full live orchestra. I am a total nerd. I'm a longtime violinist. I learned to play, you know, a lot of John Williams music myself over my life. And so like that was the one moment where I like got really choked up and I was like, oh my God, it's John Williams. Apparently, and I know you've talked about this, Dalton, in your reporting, but he had a conversation with Kathleen Kennedy, you know, a little while ago, where he said, you know, the only main Star Wars character that I haven't like written a theme for is Obi-Wan. And so he wrote the theme for Obi-Wan Kenobi. And you know, there's been a lot of really great work in the Star Wars music space recently. You know, Ludwig Göransson has been so great on The Mandalorian. Nicholas Britell from Succession is doing the music for Andor. But there's something about a John Williams score, man. And at the end of it, he said, you know, I'm going to play one that's not Star Wars. And then he played the Indiana Jones theme, which is just, I would have been happy if it was just John Williams weekend, just banger after banger, you know, Harry Potter and Jurassic Park and everything. And then Harrison Ford came out and he told us a little bit about not Han Solo, but Indiana Jones, the upcoming movie that's coming out. So that was something that was really, for me, like the music of Star Wars has always been such a huge part of why I've connected with it. I think that's part of why the original trilogy works so well. And so to get to hear that with a full audience and with a live orchestra, and then he played the Imperial March to end things. So there was just something really magical about it, you know, because he's 90. It was cool. It was so cool to see him up there and conducting. I mean, what a legend.
It's super cool. I mean, I went to one of those things where they, you know, they have a full orchestra on stage and play the movie. So, you know, you go and you watch Empire Strikes Back in the full orchestra. And it was so awesome. But to be in a crowd surrounded by Star Wars fans with John Williams conducting Star Wars music is just about as cool as it gets. That's absolutely amazing. I still don't know if that should have made your list of top five over your spotting of someone dressed up like Frog Lady. But
I did. I mean,
was an impressive costume, though.
I can talk a little bit about the cosplays because, oh my God, they were impressive. Because, you know, like I love going to Comic-Con because like I usually... I'm very geeky. I recognize, you know, most of the things at Comic-Con, but there's always somebody where I'm like, I have no idea who you are. I knew everybody at Celebration.
Try to put a cosplay gallery together when you like you don't have the right captions for people. Right. I'm always like, whenever during Comic-Con we're passing this back and forth, I'm like, who's that? I'm not sure. Who's that? You know, we're trying to identify people.
I saw a great Bossk. Like literally looked exactly like Bossk. I texted that to our colleague Darren Franich, who is the world's number one Bossk fan. I saw I saw a lady in a Wampa costume taking a cigarette break, which was just hilarious to me. That was incredible. And then the other cool thing that they had was they set up this exhibit of Mandalorian actual sets and costumes and props. They basically brought all of the live action props and things that they use from where they go shoot down in Manhattan Beach. And they brought them up to Anaheim so you could walk through. And we saw, you know, the animatronic baby Grogu waving to everybody, a big giant Bantha, which was like as big as this room. I mean, and you know, was making Bantha mooing noises, Jawas and costumes and lightsabers and, you know, the full new Naboo starship that Mando and Grogu are flying around in. And so that was something that was really, really cool to get to see all of the tactical, you know, elements, because they always talk about the volume and you know, the technology in Dalton. I know they've talked about this in a lot of your interviews, you know, what a blessing that is, but there's something about those practical totally. Costumes and sets. And, you know, they had Jabba's throne room from, you know, Book of Boba Fett. And it's there's something really cool about getting to stand next to that kind of stuff. It just feels, I will always love that sort of, any sort of like creature or, you know, animatronic or weird costumes. That's always my jam.
100%. My favorite thing ever was at a Comic-Con once in San Diego, where they had basically a giant, sort of old like Kenner like box for action figures, and then you could go behind the plastic, so oh, you wow. could be in the like basically be a Kenner Star Wars action figure. It was pretty awesome.
If you guys were gonna go to Star Wars Celebration and cosplay, what would you guys want to be?
Lobot.
My husband has already built. My husband is insane for Halloween. Like literally, he's already discussing our costumes for this year, but he's already, when my daughter was one, he made her BB-8, which was pretty cute. And then the second, he made her an Ewok costume, which she hated. She only wore it for like 30 minutes. She understood she had to wear it to get candy. And then she's just like, I'm out of this thing. And then, but like we've gone as Rey, he made me an Endor Leia costume, which he had to like figure out like what she was wearing under her like camo cape. So I have a whole collection of Star Wars costumes that I could use.
You're set. So, I'm coming to your house for Halloween next year.
I'm pretty much set for that. But yeah, we have like, and I've been Rey a couple of times, though that was not a, you know, it was a very sort of slap together because we were more concentrating on the baby being BB-8.
And yet you got mad at me for putting Rey so high on the list of the top characters.
This was prior to Rise of Skywalker when I, you know, really was all in on Rey.
Important clarification. You
know, I know.
Important clarification. Lauren
Morgan dropping the hammer again.
Yeah. So I was Rey and then my daughter was BB-8. And then a couple years ago, she decided to be Rey. And then my husband tried on the BB-8 costume, but it was a little too tight for him. But we do have a photo of the reverse. So.
And then Rise of Skywalker came out and Lauren refused to let her daughter be Rey for Halloween anymore.
She was Rey. She's never actually seen Rise of Skywalker because it doesn't exist in our household.
You are terrible. You are terrible.
I am.
No, I think that's good parenting. Okay. I think that was the right choice.
yeah. So she has no idea it exists.
We probably got to get out of here now, but that I'm not even more jealous. This segment was a terrible idea. I was jealous before it started. Now I'm even more jealous.
Well, next year it's in London. We could really, like, I think we should go and invade the podcast.
Be international. That's right. So, but look, we, as Devin mentioned, she did tons of interviews there. And you heard one of them today, but you're going to hear a lot more of them coming up in the future this summer. So we'll be excited to get into that. Coming up next week, we will have more interviews with more cast members from Obi-Wan Kenobi. And we'll obviously recap and react to episode 4 as well. That's going to do it for this episode of Dagobah Dispatch. Thanks so much to Ewan McGregor, Hayden Christensen, Moses Ingram, Rupert Friend, and Deborah Chow for being part of the show this week. If you like what you heard, follow, rate the podcast, and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And to keep the conversation going, follow Entertainment Weekly on all socials at EW on Twitter and at Entertainment Weekly everywhere else. You can also tag us at Dalton Ross, at Devin Kogan, and at Morg Lore.
This episode of Dagobah Dispatch is hosted by Dalton Ross, Devin Kogan, and Lauren Morgan. Produced by Chanel Johnson and Sammy Junio. Edited by Sammy Junio. Full episode transcripts are available at EW.com. Thanks for listening.